You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning, everyone. I'm just waiting for you to take your seats. My name is Vilma Ramcharan, and good morning to you, and welcome back to our own space. For those of you who are here for the first time, a special welcome to you. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations land, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations.
Grounded, guided, growing. A time for centering. From Scott Kearns.
I can't seem to get away from the fact that life has an impact on us, on me. And I can't get away from the fact that I have an impact on you and on life. And that's that grounding fact. And so many things we've talked about today illustrate that. That what I do and what I say matters, and what you do and what you say matters deeply to us here, to people that we will never meet. And today's theme is that first section of Vision Works, which talks about that we ground ourselves in this interconnection. I'm always part of this web, and what I do and say always matters on it, more than I'd like sometimes, but it does. And so we keep gathering together to recommit and recommit, and I say re because we fall on our face so many times, but recommit ourselves to live in that web with compassion and justice and integrity and kindness, and we need each other to do that well in that web. So we're growing in wisdom. It sounds simple, and it's daunting.
There are three readings today. Roald Dahl wrote in My Uncle Oswald, "I began to realize how important it was to be an enthusiast in life. He taught me that if you are interested in something, no matter what it is, go at it at full speed ahead. Embrace it with both arms. Hug it, love it, and above all, become passionate about it. Lukewarm is no good. Hot is no good either. White hot and passionate is the only thing to be." And from the Dead Toad Scrolls by Kilroy Olster, "Disturbing encounters in life spur reflective thinking that jars a person from his or her exhausted ideologies and way of living. A person who lives passionately will develop a philosophical outlook because the road of excess leads to knowledge. Enthusiasm will frequently make a person look foolish and result in intermittent periods of despondency and self-questioning. Yet, only exuberance and a degree of risk-taking leads to wisdom." Finally, Jane Austen from Northanger Abbey. "I was at Norland about a month ago." "And how does dear, dear Norland look?" cried Marian. "Dear, dear Norland," said Eleanor, "probably looks much as it always does this time of year. The woods and walks thickly covered with dead leaves. "Oh," cried Marian, "with what transporting sensations have I formerly seen them fall! How have I delighted as I walked to see them driven in showers about me by the wind! What feelings they have! What feelings have they, the season, the air altogether inspired! Now there's no one to regard them. They are seen only as a nuisance, swept hastily off and driven much as possible from the sight." "It is not everyone," said Eleanor, "who has your passion for dead leaves." Offered as wisdom for the journey, Mary walked in its light.
Sorry, thank you.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
I have too many papers today, my apologies. So each week I write a focused moment. Now I'm back. I'm back. It's happening every week, which is great. It's usually related to what the perspectives is about. But partway through the week, I really do have too many pieces of paper here. Partway through the week, after spending a day deepening my understanding of the theme that I had pulled out of the lectionary passages this week, I decided that I was going to do something different. And so the readings don't really match what it is that I'm going to talk about, which is one thing. But the focus moment, which happens when I stand up in front of my computer and I spend time there staring at an empty screen, and eventually the focus moment comes out, and it's not always, it doesn't have much discipline. It just wants to be, and so it comes to be. And so we're moving into a period of time when we're going to be looking at Vision Works, the document that guides us. It's almost 5 years since it was re-looked at and revised, so we'll need to be putting a team together to revise that again, and it calls us to be who we want to be. So we will be looking for that, and so that's an important piece of work. And I think that's where the focus moment came from, the sense that that work happens and that it has continued to happen in this place. But it came out in Jean's voice. So it's written in Jean's voice. And it's called "And Here We Are." Yeah, there was a beginning, all right. Though I couldn't tell you where it just started. Or when, either. I have no idea when. Come to think of it, I'm not too sure who, either. Not sure who started it. But there was certainly a beginning. Someone around here could likely tell you where to find the details, the motions and minutes, the names of the people who were here at that time. I can't remember all that stuff. I might not have even known any of it then. You can't imagine the reading we had to do. The books. Good Lord, we read a lot of books and had to make space for them all. And not just space, but space up here too, in your noggin. Those books probably took up more space there than they did all collected together on a bookshelf. But we did collect them all, line them up. You can find them on some shelf in the back room. Had to clean up a few of them. They were filled with sticky notes, mostly illegible. And others were underlined so comprehensively, it was impossible to tell if any one thing stood out from all the rest. Truth is, I don't even know if we knew what we were doing back then. We were making a better world, had been all along. Came at it through book learning, as most do. But then we got sidetracked. Fell in love with being together. And here we are. we're going to keep playing. There we are. Thank you. It was all those papers had me confused. We're moving into this time when we're going to be looking at Vision Works, and I read the entire thing a couple of weeks ago before I started writing Focus Moments again as a focus moment. And then the plan is that we'll look at a different section of it each week. And that's kind of where things shifted a little bit in my preparation this week. I started out, as I often do, many of you know, that I do go and look at the Bible passages that are chosen for the lectionary and which many clergy will be looking at to speak today. And those passages included a passage from Isaiah where he talks about a branch growing out of the stump of Jesse, who was David's father, and that line had created this huge country of a bunch of different tribes that had come together, but was currently, at that point in time, under siege, had lost to the Assyrians, and knew that there was very little hope in the future. And so that story is told in Isaiah, and he talks about that branch coming out of the stump, or the another growth coming out of the roots as it finds its new life, and relates it to a child that will come and will lead people to hope. And it's a story that's embedded, that story of hope, and not the particular details of Isaiah, but a story of hope always comes into our hearts when things are bad. Not necessarily because we have the strength to hope, but because we think that we can do something to get out of this situation, can't we? And so we try to do things to get out of this situation over and over and over again. And we think that that's what hope is coming up with that next thing we need to do to get out of this situation. But I'm not really sure that's what Isaiah was trying to say, and that's not where I want to go today. So, but in that story, I lifted up the concept of children, which is what all the readings were to be about, but I don't think I read them, did we? Did we read the readings? We did read the readings, yeah. Honestly, what a day. It's that film crew that's here that's driving me crazy. I'm kidding. Everybody would be really nervous if that was the case, but they know that I'm not worried about them. It's just the paper. So anyway, so I was talking about children and enthusiasm, and the enthusiasm that children have for what it is that they are doing, whatever it is that they are doing. Right out of the box, they can find joy in almost any situation. We can destroy that in them. We can do that adeptly, and we can do it without even knowing that we're doing it. But out of the box, they're just the coolest things going, and they are excited about everything that they come across. Just as the piece from Northanger Abbey said, you know, leaves, like, aren't they amazing, right? And snowflakes. I mean, snowflakes are amazing. There's so many things that are just beyond amazing, and children find them. Often they'll try to point them out to us, and we'll miss it, and we'll be going on with something, oh, yeah, lovely, honey, yeah, yeah. And we'll go on with something else, and we miss those really important moments of amazement. So that's where I was going. And then I was trying to draw that into VisionWorks, and I realized that the part of VisionWorks that I was talking about, the first section, which is on our grounded, we're grounded in the interconnectedness of all life, that was the piece I was looking at, to talk about, you know, the founding principles of who we are. And children could work into that. I mean, there's not a species in the world that doesn't reproduce, whether it's animal species and bugs and stuff like that, and people. We all reproduce. So children, I could get to that interconnectedness of life through the idea of children. And that's where I went off, you know, 90 miles an hour down a dead-end street, actually, because I realized that's not the first principle. I mean, we talk about
being grounded in the interconnectedness of life. Every week, Scott talks about it. He tells us how we are embedded in that matrix and how, because we are, we seek to engage it differently. When you realize that you're so connected in that, you can't just do something and walk away. You have to be responsible. And so Scott generally talks about that every single week. But it's not our first principle. When I went, just scrambled for a copy of VisionWorks printed out beside my desk, and I looked at it, I started reading, and I thought, that's not it. That's the introduction. I looked at the introduction, and I realized that the introduction of VisionWorks is our first principle. It's not the being grounded in the interconnectedness of all life. We don't get there without going through the introduction. And so I decided I was going to go to the introduction instead, and then the kids just didn't make any sense. So I want to read to you the introduction section of VisionWorks, which was accepted by the congregation in 2015, written mostly during 2014 with members of the congregation, and then approved by the congregation at its annual meeting. And it's, the heading is West Hill United, a progressive spiritual community where how you live is more important than what you believe. That's just the title. But this is the important piece. VisionWorks is our guiding document. It articulates our shared values and reflects what we hold to be of utmost significance in our community life. It calls us to examine ourselves in light of these values as we set priorities and make decisions both individually and as a community. As individuals with diverse backgrounds and viewpoints, we come together, opening ourselves to new ideas that may challenge our previously held perspectives. How many of you have previously held perspectives? Yep, we do. And they need to be challenged all the time. Sometimes that happens within the health of a good marital relationship, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it happens at work with a coworker that comes from just a completely other headspace, different style of leadership. My daughter-in-law leaned over to me yesterday and said about the person who was leading the children's choir at that point, she's a school principal. I said, "Do you think?" The way she was leading those kids, it was just so obvious what kind of person she was. And I know that if she shared, you know, my little office cubicle, I'd go mad. Right? We know people that are in our lives that just their personalities work for them beautifully, but oh my goodness. So we find ways to create relationships with them that aren't dependent just on personality, right? So when we do that, we end up not just having to abide someone else's personality, but also to abide their ideas and figure out how we're going to do that. And we may want to stick to ours, or we may embrace something else, but we're engaged in that interaction, which is so important. With roots in the Judeo-Christian tradition, that's West Hill, we embrace theists, agnostics, and atheists. What we share is a reverence for life that moves us to seek truth, live fully, care deeply, pursue justice, and make a difference in the world. We respect individual differences insofar as they are not harmful or disrespectful of others. We respect individual differences insofar as they are not harmful or disrespectful of others. We respect individual differences insofar as they are not harmful or disrespectful of others. That is our first principle. And it caught me totally unawares. I wasn't really looking for it. I thought I was doing the other section. I'm reading this going, oh yeah, what? This doesn't have anything to do with children and connectedness. But that line, does it not distinguish who we are as this group, this community that is growing out of a religious tradition? And we use those words really carefully, particularly now that we're still in that tradition. But we are growing out of it, and those words invite us to see how. Because in religious traditions, the anthropology of religion is not my specialty, and I'm not an anthropologist, but early on, when we realized, I like to think that the world, this crazy hostile place, this, you know, the mechanics of climate, totally not understood, the world shifting and moving, and winds and water and horrors and poisons and death and who knows what all. And it just went on. I mean, if you were watching it from a distance, you'd see the movement on the planet. You'd think it was just so awesome to watch all that happen. And the species that were part of that were coming out of that in incredibly beautiful and wondrous ways over eons, I may say, developing from something that was, you know, like a little glob of something or other into a bird of paradise, the ones that fly, who do the most incredible things when they're mating, like the plumage is unbelievable. They were developing, and plants were developing, and then we arrived, you know, like, I mean, we were around, but at some point, we looked at one another and we felt love. We looked at one another and we wanted to care for one another. We looked at one another and it wasn't just, you know, running around trying to survive. It was, you mean something to me. And once that came into play, how could you just abide the horrors of climate or the injustices of poison or the, you know, the ways that we were running around killing one another? How could you do that if the person that was going to be killed next was someone you loved? So religion grew up as a way to help us manage that or give us a sense of a little bit of control over that. And so in the various parts of the world and in the different factions that have split off from the split-offs, there are deeply held truths, beliefs, about how that particular group has the favor of that particular deity or deities. How that particular voice and those stories and those readings are so powerful because they mean that these people we love, they're at little risk. They're not at risk at this point. We love them and we're caring for them within this framework, which we believe will keep them safe. And it almost always, it had to graduate at some point to an afterlife because the people that you were keeping safe weren't kept safe. They still died just like everybody else that ate that poison. Didn't matter what our beliefs were. They died. And so we had to come up with a reasoned, oftentimes irrational from the point of view of the 21st century, but we came up with this rational, reasoned approach to protecting them by telling a story. And we told a story. We told a story that could make you weep. But it put those people we loved, it put them in a place that was safe. And it was a place that we were going to go later and we would be with them. And we created some of the most beautiful monuments to that than anyone has seen. We create these beautiful monuments to those whom we have loved. But that's not where we are right now, because we're in the 21st century. And when I read those Bible stories this week, and I saw them as stories because I'd been taught that they were stories. I was taught that Isaiah isn't one person. It's probably three voices, as some people believe too, but very likely three, written at very different times in the history of the Israelite people. Very different understandings. One written back as sort of prophecies when they're already standing in the glory. And I know that because I was taught it. And I know that little child that was written about in Isaiah had nothing to do with the story that was developed some 700 years later. But that story, someone wanted to find some power in that story. So they went back and they found other stuff in their roots that would validate it. And the only common thing between those two stories is that people were still dying and we still loved them. We still wanted to do something to make them safe. And so we needed to come up with a narrative that would do that. And we did. So what do we do now? And what does VisionWorks have to do with it? The segment that I read you over and over and over, that segment, talks about being respectful to people of differing worldviews. Religion down through the ages hasn't had much patience with respect. It's mostly felt that it's its way or nothing at all. And so we are a little different there. Now, at the Parliament of World Religions a few weeks ago, yes, we were all in the same rooms and we were all sharing our ideas and we were all deeply respectful. But almost every person in that space believed that they were the ones with the right story. I mean, they had to be or they wouldn't have been there. So telling those stories continues, and it continues to privilege the people within the story who are telling it. And we say in that section, we respect individual differences insofar as they are not harmful or disrespectful to others. And I could just go over that second part over and over and over again. As long as they are not harmful or disrespectful to others. And that is our first principle. Because if a religious tradition is doing something that is harmful or disrespectful to others, it's our responsibility to say, because we're part of this document, because we're part of the community that created this document, it's our responsibility to say, that is not respectful, or that is harmful, and I am not going to let you do that. And so I'm going to do whatever number of things I need to do to make that stop. Right? Whether it means I write a letter to my MP, whether it means I chain myself to, something. I don't know what I might chain myself to. You never know. If it means you get into contact with someone and have that conversation, you're going to be respectful because it says that's what you're going to do. But you're not going to be persuaded to let somebody do something just because their religion tells them it's okay. And that's what defines you differently. That's what defines you as people who are making this significant change within a religious tradition and out of it. Because honoring each other's religious traditions isn't good enough anymore. I don't want you to be rude. You're supposed to be respectful, says so right here. I don't want you to be rude. I don't want you to talk down to someone. But I do want you to speak what it is that you need to speak, so that people can see and understand where your line is drawn and how what they're offering is maybe not something that's good for the entire human community, and how can we get beyond that. I cannot tell you how proud I am of the things that you have done. Not because of this paper. We wrote down what you were already doing. Well, I wasn't part of it, but they wrote down what you were already doing. You are standing in the way of injustice. You're speaking to members of parliament. You're forming groups that can talk about things. You're engaging people in areas that no church would ever dare doing. Do you remember that time? Do you remember that time when we still had a Sunday club and the kids had decided it would be pajama day, and no one wore pajamas, and we were all horribly embarrassed. Now, that was only just the kids and the teachers that wore pajamas. But because we were so embarrassed, remember the whole congregation showed up in pajamas that Sunday? If you remember that, put your hand up. Did you have your pajamas on? I did too. And you know what else happened on that Sunday? Well, about 4 days before that, I'd had a phone call as I was running out the door from someone who asked if we might be interested in taking someone into sanctuary. And Moreland, where's Moreland? Moreland had mentioned at... Oh, he's left. Sorry about that, Moreland. Moreland had mentioned at a board meeting about people who did not want to go back for a second tour in the States, and should we be offering them sanctuary so that they did not have to go back to Afghanistan or wherever it was they were going at that point in time. And so I thought that's what this person was talking about, but he wasn't. He was talking about some woman from Ethiopia, I think, and I was like, how did you get my name? And he said, well, I read your book and I thought you'd be helpful. And I thought, yep, we can do this. So I called Dana Wilson Lee, who was the chair at the time, and we had a conversation on Saturday. We had a board meeting on Sunday morning, and after, what did we do during the congregational meeting? We put up our pajamaed arms. And we voted to let a woman who would have been deported, a return to torture situation is what it's called, move into the building. So You guys do this stuff. You don't have to go and check this document out every time and say, okay, can we do that? But most of the churches, I think at one point we were one of 3 or 5 churches in the country that would take people into sanctuary. We didn't have to cost it out and, you know, figure out whether we had the time or the energy or the space. We just said, okay, right? That's what sets us apart, is that respect. And as we go through the different segments of Vision Works and engage them, I know we'll do it with respect, right? So that's where I got to today. I didn't get to children. I got to you. And I got to how young we are in this work and how inspiring it can be when we share it and how far it can take us when we risk letting go of those things that hold us back and just make it work because it needs to work. Thank you. I don't have to tell you about all the crap going on out there, about the hardship and the heartache and the sorrow and the lament. I don't need to tell you how hard it is to go out there and be who you really are in every situation. We want to protect ourselves. I get that. I want my heart to be safe. But I know who you are. And I know that you will risk the safety of your heart. I know that you will go out and speak to people because they needed an ear. I know that you will go out and sit down with someone on the side of the street and just listen to the story. I know that you will go out from this place and take the challenge that we make to one another each week. And that is to be present. To be present in the moment, in the conversation, in the place, in the healing, in the wholeness, and in the opportunity that comes from that. Go from this place and be present. Go in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.